Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference call of SNP Schneider-Neureither & Partner SE. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Marcel Wiskow, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning or good afternoon. This is Marcel Wiskow, Head of Investor Relations. Thanks for joining us to discuss our results for the first half of 2018. I'm joined by our CEO, Dr. Andreas Schneider-Neureither, our new CFO since July 2018, Dr. Uwe Schwelbach, and Mr. Oliver Schwede, Managing Director, Transformation Deutschland, and responsible for the corporate strategy since April this year. In addition, on our investor relations website, you can find our half-year report and the presentation for this call. With that, I would like to turn things over to our new CFO, who will guide you through the first slides of the presentation.
Hello to everybody. This is Uwe Schwelbach. It's a pleasure for me to present you the half-year one numbers for 2018. I joined the company two and a half weeks ago. I'm also delighted to share my first impressions and observations, which might be of interest for you. If we look on the key figures slide, we can say that after a strong growth in 2017, SNP started the year 2018 again with a high growth. The growth rate is 35%, being 33% inorganic growth and 2% organic growth. The revenue sums up to 65.5 million euros. On the cost side, there have been a couple of effects that lead to a negative EBITDA and a negative EBIT. The biggest effect being restructuring measures across the organization in early 2018, especially on the U.S. market. In addition, we have been seeing delays in project completions. We suffered from a temporarily lower capacity utilization rate, and as an effect, also sold less software licenses in this time frame. The third effect I want to mention is an increase in personal expenses. There have been a lot of recruitment activities in the second half year 2017, and in combination with our lower capacity utilization rate, of course, this has a negative effect on the bottom line of our P&L. What I want to pick out as well is the increase in the equity ratio that sits at 39.1% as we speak. When we take a deeper look at revenues and go to the next slide, we see an increase in foreign revenues compared to prior years. We look now at an equilibrated situation between the DACH region and the global perspective. All regions are significantly up, except the U.S. market, which again, due to restructuring, has suffered also on the revenue side. The effect was limited to the first quarter. In the second quarter, we turned the situation and are positive again on the revenue side in the U.S. On the next slide, you will see the software revenue. Software revenues in total are up 88%, which is majorly driven by inorganic and organic growth. Picking out our products, the SNP Transformation Backbone is up 32%, SNP Data Provisioning and Masking up 54%. Our interface scanner is up 12.5%. A substantial increase in software revenues that foster our ambitions in future years. The next slide depicts The maintenance revenues within the software division were up 104% for maintenance, 110% even for licenses. Here, our organic growth is much higher for the licenses than for maintenance. In maintenance, the effect is 4.2 million, thereof an organic growth of 1.7 million. Now we move to the balance sheet. When we comment on the essence, the main effect between the end of the year 2017 and June 30, 2018 is on the current asset side. It's a decrease in cash and cash equivalents due to the settlement of our current liability. In addition, we also decreased the trade receivables, an effect of 2.4 million. So obviously the cash and cash equivalent effect is much higher with 15.4 million. On the non-current asset side, we have been seeing a decline in goodwill due to exchange rate effect. The effect is about 5 million and is due to our recent acquisition in South America. On the equity side, we see a decline in financial liabilities due to the payments of the purchase price installments for the acquisitions, followed by an effect on trade payables, which declined by 4.2 million to 7.2 million. In addition, we've seen other non-financial liabilities declining due to bonus payments. The effect is a little bit smaller with 1.2 million. On the non-current liability side, we see a decrease on the purchase price liabilities, so that's the counterpart effect for the decrease in the current assets. Equity is down by about 5 million due to the net loss of the period ending June 30. Observing this, we look at a situation that is far from optimal. It's a situation where we have to act and where we are actively discussing a bundle of measures, which I will shortly comment on and guide you through. We are setting up dedicated initiatives for revenue growth, and Andreas will elaborate on that further down the road in this presentation. We will have a high focus on cost efficiency, so we're setting up a cost efficiency program. We're actively steering our project profitability and are measuring our sales organization according to project profitability. In addition to that, in order to steer our liquidity, we defined working capital measures, which should significantly reduce our working capital needs. There will be an adjustment of our standard payment terms, aggressive management of overdues, an increase in liabilities, all, let's say, basic measures, but now with a, let's say, consistent approach and with a very high focus on it. So this leads to a tight liquidity monitoring, which in my eyes is needed in the second half of the year in order to prepare our organization for a very, very positive year 2019. So one last point, there will be also an intense communication with our banks regarding the covenants that are in place at the moment. So I hand over to Andreas, who will guide you through the strategy technology market.
Hello, this is Andreas Steiner-Neureder. Thank you for joining. So, you see in the numbers that we have some internal inefficiencies which we solve in the next month. The good news is we have already the technology, we are doing the great projects, we did it in the last time, we executed more than 7,000 successful transformation projects and zero unsuccessful. And we have also software what we can sell, which has a high value for our customers. The issue is, and this is an IT issue, everybody's thinking in mandates and in mandates and licenses. Now we want to shift our sales force to value selling and also to the highest approach to strategic selling. I make an example. Stockholders who are long-term invested in S&P know it. 2014, we made the split in of Hewlett Packard, and we announced very proudly a number. We made a contract $6 million. When you see, at this time, Hewlett Packard made $120 billion revenue, and they split it the company in two parts. Mostly about $60 million, HP Inc. and HP Enterprise, the new one which had an IPO in the November 2014. So the overall cost for the split was $2.7 billion. $500 million maybe went to the lawyers, $500 million went to the investment bankers, for the IPO, internal costs and auditors and so on. So nobody was delivering rocket science. They're delivering just really commodity. But there was a small company based in Heidelberg who delivered really rocket science. We split in 6 months the whole history of HP with billions of documents. Really billion of documents in 6 months, and we got for this $6 million. $5 million for consultancy, $1 million for the software. And we were pretty happy about this. So now I'm coming back to value selling. The value, I think, was much higher than $6 million. On the strategic level, when we are coming to a customer, and even when it's the most complex project, it's considered already done. We never fail. And just for this, we should at least get $50 million. So, I'm coming back now to our new model. And it's not so easy to implement, because it's a huge shift in our sales department to think about talking not about mandates and adding a license, to talk about the value and talk about the strategic value. At the moment in our price model, for example, when we get for every month a license fee of project, and we are faster 2 months, we're getting less licenses. But this is crazy. This we have to change. And we are working on this since January. We hired a new chief revenue officer, and now after the 6 months we had great ideas, but from the personality it was a miscast. This was distracting also internally our sales force, so it was not so helpful. S&P doesn't have a cost problem, we have a revenue problem. And it's not a market problem, it's an internal problem. And this is more or less a good news, because then it would be a market problem, it would be much more complicated. So, M&A still works. The downsizing or reducing of complexity with market size is still working. Carve-outs working. S4 tsunami, at the moment, not working. We are increasing our revenue every year 100% in this, but with a small number. But a lot of our customers thinking about to go to S4. So when SAP is presenting numbers about how many S4 customers, mostly they are small customers. We are not interested in this segment. In the huge segment, investment, enterprises, 10, 50, 100 billion revenue and more, they are still hesitating. They are doing proof of concepts. This is up to now not contributing as much as we expected. But it will come. We are sure about this, and also SAP. So when this tsunami is coming, we have three possibilities when you are a customer. You can do the brownfield approach. That means you don't change anything. You just make a technical upgrade to S4. Or you do a greenfield approach. That means you start from scratch. Okay, now we're talking about big customers who have 100 or 200 installations, productive SAP systems. Nobody of these guys would do a brownfield approach. Nobody would go to, with 200 systems to S4, and nobody would go a greenfield approach. Because everybody knows, when you're looking 20 years back, which disaster it was to have a greenfield approach to go to R3. Because 5 years, it costs money. Money is only one. The time is the other problem, and also you don't know ever what is the result. But fortunately, S&P invented the bluefield approach. This is also, by the way, a trademark of S&P. And when you maybe saw our press releases last time, IBM is going to the whole market in the world with our bluefield approach. Bluefield means the template-based approach. You define a template, maybe you have 100 systems, after this the template is 20, you bring over only the best processes, you can adjust them, and then you bring the data over, the whole historical data, what you need in each area, maybe in HR you need the full history, maybe in finance 2 years, and in sales and distribution 5 years. Our approach is fully flexible, and this is a unique approach on this planet. And so, one time this tsunami is coming, and then we have a corner in the market because nobody else can provide this. But this is no excuse why the numbers are so bad, because this is what I mentioned before, internal problems. Because of restructuring, miscasts, because still with the market what's available now, we could do our numbers, we should do our numbers easily. Okay, now I hand over to more detailed information to my head of corporate development, is Oliver Schwede.
Yes, thank you, Andreas, and maybe just as an additional comment regarding the S4 tsunami, which I think everyone is aware that it will come. You explained the situation of the large enterprises and the bluefield approach that you are suggesting to the market. And we are engaged already in many of the proof of concepts of large enterprises that Andreas mentioned, even with the new names, which of course opens up new opportunities for us, because as these customers are moving to S4, they do not only want to change the release, so to say, but they also want to consolidate their landscape and get benefits out of that. So this is exactly fitting to the bluefield approach. Second point I wanted to tell as a reason for the customers still hesitating, it's about the maturity curve of the SAP releases that we see. The current release is being seen as very stable and, well, as a good basis to for the customers to move now. Everybody knows that the version 1 is not the best version if you're not an earlier follower, so the market waited a little bit. The other thing is that the estimated project duration of these programs was about, let's say, 5 years. And I think most of the people agree that a five-year program is very hard to manage due to, for example, changes in business models, in scope, in stakeholders, and so on. And this is why the Bluefield approach is so of value for the customers, because we can cut this project duration extremely and get it down to a manageable project duration. So we are very confident that with the current proof of concept that we are doing with the customers, and this curve is still really rising very strongly, that we are in the best position to support the customers when the full implementation is starting. So maybe this, and we are looking forward to your questions on that for the S/4HANA topic. We get this feedback from our customer talks. We are all on the street. Nobody from us is in an ivory tower here. And we have seen the customers in Sapphire and looking forward to welcome them on our central custom event, the Transformation World, which they already are very interested in. Next point I want to make is a different view on how we will enhance profitability. So first of all, we increased, like Uwe already said, our possibilities to have a very deep look into the project profitability, taking into account fully loaded costs and so on. So now we are taking measures on looking at each project in the perspective of profitability in order to have immediate effects in current projects, but also, of course, on the sales cycle, where we are including these views in a very strong way when we are going to the market with the pricing offers. The second thing is, and Andreas mentioned this already as well, we shifted our account strategy and we implemented with the acquisition strategy that we had in the past, the ability to global deliver projects and programs, and we set up the global account teams, which is, of course, something that takes a little time too. We had first successes. We are currently about to find the next one in this quarter, where we are going to not only deliver from a global point of view, but also have joined account forces to accelerate sales cycles with these large enterprises who really act global and where the decision makers are around the world. The software licenses is, of course, a big part when we look at the profitability that we are going to forecast for this year. As already said, it's below expectations. We are very confident that with the current negotiations that we have with large enterprises, we will be able to close significant deals for our core software solutions with immediate effect for the books in quarter three and quarter four this year. And we have, due to the changes that we have in the global sales management responsibility, the whole executive team of S&P supporting these opportunities right now. The implementation of the value-based pricing, as Andreas already elaborated on, is a process where not only the salespeople have to understand the value that our solutions bring to the customer, we have also to learn from the customer itself, and we did several workshops already where we have been asking our customers that already use these solutions to help us identify the value drivers so that they are real. And this is, of course, something that not only the salespeople have to learn, but also it's integrated in the marketing and in the overall approach to the market. We are well on the way. We have very good reference customers that are telling this to the market in the events and, of course, in one-to-one workshops that we have with other customers. So it's a way that we started to really understand the value-based pricing model and the strategic selling that Andreas mentioned. But we are in a good shape. We learned a lot, and I'm absolutely convinced that this will be a future value driver, and this will affect the profitability in a sustainable way. Last but not least, one practical measure that we took in the beginning of this year, we had a new rate card introduced for professional services, and we had a very good exception by the market, so we laid with the projects that we already sold this year and then we are going to sell in the second half the foundation for a better project profitability for each project, and of course this is a measure that is sustainable for the future, so this is one more point that makes us very confident that we are in a good shape for our next steps. Okay. This would be my comments for the go-to-market strategy, and I would like to hand over to you again for the last one.
Yes, hello again. Now looking at the forecast, we reduced the outlook for 2018 to 135 to 140 million euros. This converts into an EBITDA non-IFRS in the mid-single-digit million range, after years with a little bit of a higher range in 2017 and 2016. I think the main point here is that the situation, the profitability situation is changing in the second half of 2018 after a weaker first half. We will look at more attractive second half of the year, and the overall goal will be to prepare ourselves for 2019. When we look at the next slide, again, the comment, the range will be between 135 and 140 million. EBIT margin will be positive single-digit percentage range for the second half of the year, EBITDA a little bit higher respectively. Talking about 2019 and then also maybe about future years, we for sure adhere to the overriding medium-term target for a majorly increased structural profitability, and we see the first signs coming up in the second half of the year 2018. We're very positive about our software license sales, which go along with a slightly changed business model as the service revenues, higher operating margins, and just to recall this, even in the first half of the year, software sales have been 88% up. In addition, I want to stress one point again that Oliver mentioned. We implemented a price increase in the first half of the year, so even with a lower level of sales, we could implement this at a higher price that makes us positive for the profitability situation in the second half 2018 and then going into 2019, that we also will have that increased price level with a much higher volume. To end this presentation, there will be, in addition, significant measures to influence cost and cash flow. These measures will be implemented in the second half of the year 2018. They might not have an immediate effect in the second half of the year 2018, but then everything will be prepared for 2019. On the other hand, there's also some immediate measures that can be implemented and that we will see and then comment on at the end of the year. Thank you.
OK.
Okay, then we could start our Q&A session.
Thank you. Then we will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it is your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your question. One moment, please, for the first question. We've received the first question. It comes from Mr. Degonis of Berenberg. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, good afternoon. Could you maybe give us a regional breakdown of which how the regions are doing in terms of profitability, which ones are profitable and which ones are loss-making right now?
Yes, we can. For the first half of the year, we have been looking at a lower profitability in the US region, a moderate profitability for the DACH region, and the usual profitability for the remainder of the regions or the company.
Yeah, I mean, overall, you, as a group, you made a loss, so there must be some loss-making regions, right?
Yeah, correct.
Which are? Asia? US?
US.
US. Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe a follow-on on the US. So I understand that you've replaced a lot of your salespeople. You also let 25 people overall go. What is the setup currently? The chief revenue officer has left the company. So how's the sales setup? Is that back up to speed, or is it still a work in progress? How many people do you have there? How does it look like right now?
We have about 75 people in US. At the moment, we are searching for a new CEO for US. This model, what we implement, this hub model, where we divide, before we had a managing director model, every managing director had the goal was the P&L, both revenue and EBIT. Then we divided it in a hub structure, where the salespeople had just order entry and the delivery just to deliver. I think in our size this model is not efficient, so we will change it back to a managing director model. And this is the reason why we are searching now for a CEO for US.
Okay, thank you.
In addition, we could say that from the headquarters in Germany, we are supporting current software campaigns in the US. So we have a centralized team in Germany here, which is now focusing on selling software in the US.
If we find a new CEO, I will take over. That's me, Andreas Seidenreiter. I will take over and will be present with a lot of time in the US.
Okay. And maybe a second question on what can you tell us what type of covenants you have with the banks?
Yeah, that I would comment that these are typical covenants that a company like ours has with banks.
Okay. I'm just thinking your EBITDA will be close to zero this year, so is there any EV EBITDA restriction? Net debt EBITDA?
Not immediate EBITDA, but yeah, the profitability is part of the covenant.
Okay, thank you.
But only covenant, of course, this is the internal project number one that we have a close look to the working capital, to the profitability, to costs. This is a multidimensional issue what we have to handle, and the main focus is internally on this.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We've received another question. It comes from Holger Schmidt of Metzler Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. A couple of questions. In the call, you mentioned that you have been able to foster price increases. Could you give us some color here about the order of magnitude? Secondly, do you see a risk of goodwill impairment? And then thirdly, in your report, you mentioned a very well-filled business pipeline. Could you give us some more information here with regard to the size as compared to last year? How does has it developed as compared to your plans? And then lastly, I mean, there was a very low utilization of your consultant space. Do you plan to adjust your workforce, and will we see further restructuring expenses?
Okay, maybe this is Andreas again. Maybe I start with the last one. We adjust already, especially in the U.S., already the workforce. Even in Germany, we are not fully utilized, but we wouldn't send people home now, because to get them back, it's more or less not possible. So we have to live with this. In countries where it's easy to get rid of people, we did this already. So coming to the first question, software up. The goal before was when we, in our core business, I'm not talking about the software licenses, I'm talking about our core business now, transformation business, before it was the goal to get 20 to 30% from the revenue of in consulting for software. The goal is now 50-50, and mostly it works out. We have a lot of examples where it works out, especially within the US market. Sometimes we get more licenses already than for a consultancy.
The rate cards, we had, let's say, a higher rate cards in the double digits area, right? And with regard to the other core products that we are providing to the market, I can tell, for example, from a workshop that we had with a DAX customer who told another customer of us, they purchased a software for us with a seven-digit number for the compliance program behind that. And I asked them whether they needed a business case for that internally to purchase the software, and they said no, it was abuse, because the value, as we told before, was on the table when they used the product. So this is something that we want, of course, to spread out to the whole customer base, shifting the pricing model for the for the other solutions, which are not the core, so the transformation backbone solution.
So now I remain with the impairment question. So it's a very good question. I like it. We intensively discussed the goodwill issue with our auditors in the last couple of days. So the conclusion is that we neither see any need for an impairment right now, nor do we see any need for an impairment at the end of the year, given our current forecast.
Yes, and I think there was one more regarding the business pipeline. I'm not really sure what level of detail you expect. Maybe you can say, but I would comment in general, the small and medium business, which is always based for us, is still working and growing in a, let's say, normal way. What is really being added now is the C-level context that we have to the top companies, so maybe Fortune 500, for example. So if we are talking about S/4HANA POPs, for example, I would say we are currently engaged in more than 20 POCs, and these are really large enterprises, and this is true for transactions as well. So from my perspective, the average deal size I would expect to grow significantly within the next 12 months.
And could you give could you give us some idea about your usual hit rate?
Yes, the usual hit rate historical scene was very high. It was about 50%, maybe 40-50%. It's currently not so high, but this is due to a much larger engagement in these in the market, right? So the number of opportunities has grown significantly. And of course, if you're pitching for large-scale programs, there are many competitors in the market. Also, we have a unique position here. This leads to a little smaller win rate. I would say it's maybe about 40% right now.
Okay, many thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Henning Steinbrink of Otto BHF. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Hi there. Okay, I have a question regarding the delta between reported EBIT and non-IFRS EBIT. It's around 2.4 million. Could you specify on what it is? Is it FX only, or have you already included one-offs, restructuring related or so forth? And second part of this question is exactly the restructuring measures you already mentioned on. Can you quantify on them in total, like in terms of one-off costs regarding restructuring, reorganization, or personal adjustment? How much was it in H1, and what do you expect for H2?
Yeah. So the total effect we're talking about delta is 3 million, and it's composed by, let's say, two pieces. It's 1.8 million restructuring expenses and 1.2 million acquisition related amortization. That's the difference between IFRS and non-IFRS. Out of the 1.8 million, that's purely one-off, and I, at this very stage, where let's say, personally from my side, where I'm 2.5 weeks here, I cannot give you an estimation about the effect of one-off in the second half of the year.
So there are no plannings, so you have no plan figures whatsoever for any one-offs basically regarding the second half?
Okay. No, there might be, but I can also not tell you that there's a plan.
But for us to model, I mean, of course, we have to model the system, and would it be wise to have this same amount accounted for the second half, or would that be far too high?
I in that case, I would wait for our Q3 figures.
Okay, fair enough. Another question is regarding the Spectrum brand deal. You mentioned that software bookings amounted to $1.9 million. You got that order in May. So also regarding IFRS 15, were these software licenses booked in Q2 altogether, or how did you apply?
No, it's every month over time. Every month of the project, you book one part of the license.
Yes. The major component is the transformation backbone for that deal, so it's overtime for the project duration.
Okay, super. Thanks. Regarding further restructuring, I mean, Americas is still an issue. You mentioned that, North America. South America, I'm not so sure how far you are there. And also, from my understanding, China remained an issue, which was originally tackled by Mr. Goettler. And maybe you can give us a quick update on the Asian development right now.
Can I, before we go to Asia, let's comment on the U.S. So, yes, there have been restructuring measures, but it was early 2018, and we changed the profitability in the second quarter. Yeah. So there's a development there. Yeah. South America is not at all a restructuring case. It's an acquisition, and it's positive, and
Of course, now we are changing South America also to sell our software and also our consultancy, our transformation consultancy. Here we are in a good way. In the meantime, China and Southeast Asia is also under control. It's not an issue anymore. And they are growing now also. We sent the right people down. In China, here we are still internally hesitating if we are just running this old business, what we acquired, because here we have also some concerns about IP violations in China. And as long this market is not so huge, we are thinking how if we should take the risk. So our major focus is in countries like Germany, UK, Switzerland, and also US on the same side.
But that means, I mean, in terms of profitability, you're generating revenues there still, and but if you're not bringing it up to the same business model, then obviously these areas, these geographic areas, would come in with far less of a profitability than what you are aiming for, no?
Any country where we are and where our acquisitions are, we will transform our business model. The only one is China, where we are a little more careful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is about 4 million revenue.
Yeah.
So it's in the whole context, it's peanuts at the moment.
Okay. Two questions I have. So one is regarding the, you know, we have to model the system, and not just for 18, but 19 and 20 and going further. So in terms of medium-term profitability for the group, yes, I mean, all we analysts are revising down our estimates now for S&P, and, but at the end, it's the question is where should it go towards the medium term in terms of EBIT profitability or margin? Is it? Can you give us any hint on? I mean, obviously, a couple of years ago, or not that long ago, we had targets from S&P, which were closer to the 20% than the one digit levels we are seeing now. Would you feel comfortable with a medium term target of like 10 to 12% EBIT margin, or is that a medium to long term target you could aim for, or would it be still too high?
You know, I'm also at the moment still the major shareholder. Now it's a personal statement. Yeah. When we find really the way how to sell strategically and not with this mandate plus, then you can imagine when we get the deal in HP was profitable. It was good. The 6 million. But can you imagine when we would get and sell it strategically for 50 million, how the EBIT margin would be? Maybe this could answer my long-term view. I'm working maybe 100 hours a week for this company, for my company.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last but not least, Mr. Göttler left the company in April. You had to set up provisions for that. Can you quantify them then, or have they been set up already and accounted for in Q2, or will them? And how did you account for? What's the dimension, or is there anything we can still expect for the remainder of the year?
It's everything is included in the numbers.
In the Q2 numbers?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Mr. Siu. Please go ahead. Your line is now open. Mr. Scheidt, you can ask your question now. Your line is now open. Maybe you are on mute.
Thank you very much. My question is regarding the possibility of a share buyback program. The last one, to my knowledge, was done in 2012-2013. Are there any plans, or at least does the board envisage a potential share buyback program in the coming weeks, months, or quarters to take advantage of the recent dramatic correction in the share price?
Okay, we analyzed this, but you heard also the discussion about the covenants, and so liquidity is for us a very important KPI at the moment. So I think it would be too risky for us now to buy shares back. Maybe everything can change pretty fast when we could, when we have some interesting and bigger license deals in the pipeline. When we could close this fast, of course, then this door is open. At the moment, every door to spend money for anything, acquisitions, buying shares back is closed.
But it's a temporary situation, and we're talking about 2018 and not 2019.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Roman Solf of MindFirst. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hello. Good afternoon. I have a question regarding the recent share price drop. In the beginning of June, we had a price about of about 34 euros. And then we got the price drop over about 30% to 24 euros. And then you sent the profit warning. So this is something very unacceptable thing for me as a private shareholder, because you obviously have an insider trading problem. So what is your take on that? How you would you like to change that?
Yeah, I can comment on that. So we made the same observation. And we undertook a couple of measures in the last days to avoid such situations in the future. So we do everything make sure that information stays inside.
Okay, thank you very much, and if you have new updates on this insider trading problem, I would like to get this information as an investor, because this is something very unacceptable. Thank you very much.
So I think I wouldn't talk about insider trading, but I mean it's obviously a move in the share price that is unusual.
Yeah, you have some kind of information leak. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's really that. But just in case it would be, we have undertaken our measures.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Chandra Suraman of MindFirst. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah. Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. I have a few. Firstly, you're still looking for a dramatic turnaround in terms of margins in the second half of the year. Having missed your last two expectations in terms of guidance, do you think your H2 margin guidance is conservative enough? Because I'm quite surprised that you will be able to increase the rate cards for all your existing services as well. That's my first question. The second one is I noticed a new line item in terms of your P&L, which is impairments of receivables. It's a small number, but I was just wondering if you have any comments on that. And finally, given your internal issues now, would you say M&A is off the table, at least in the near term? Thanks.
So I think the coming to the margins for the second half of the year, it's hard for me to give you any additional information to what has been said up to now. I wouldn't call it conservative. I wouldn't call it optimistic. I would say it's realistic. That's why we issue those numbers. And then I'm not sure if I understood your second question. Can you please repeat your second question?
Yeah, sure. So you have in your P&L that is a 225,000 euro impact from impairments on receivables and contract-based assets. Do you have any comment on this? Because it's an unusual line item now. Historically, we didn't have this line item.
Yeah, no, I cannot comment further on this. Let's move to the M&A question. No, it's not off the table. I think it's on the table, but it's not on the table for tomorrow. Again, I think we have to go through the remainder of 2018 to prepare ourselves for 2019. But any M&A activities need a couple of months before you implement them. So,
yes, but I think the question was also related to internal issues, and we can say that we implemented the structures, so this is done, and the internal issues are of course, that Schneider Neureiter mentioned. We are looking for the new general manager in the U.S.
Also, the strategy to buy MeToo SAP consultancy in different regions where we are not is, I think, it's still valid, but at the moment we are not doing it, and I think we have now consultants enough. When we would buy anything, when we can afford it, it would be a special technology, which is maybe missing in our portfolio.
Okay, all right. Maybe one quick follow-up. I realize you're looking for a new head of U.S. Is there any plans to hire a COO?
Also, this is on our list, yeah.
All right, thanks very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from Richard James of Edison. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Firstly, I've got a few questions. Firstly, on the SAP, on the S/4HANA delays, I just want to know, is it just purely technical, or was there any concerns from big companies about moving to the cloud? My second question, you mentioned that some of these projects would take 5 years. I mean, how much do you think you can bring that down by? Is it down to 2 years or 1 year? My third question is regarding the IBM services relationship. This was to do with how much of that, I mean, how much of your targeting of S/4HANA business is going to be through the IBM services relationship? Is that just I presume it's not exclusive in any region or anything like that, but could you perhaps give a bit of a discussion about IBM services? Cause I don't think you talk much about it on the call. So, and what part of the pipeline also of the S/4 business is through the IBM?
So the IBM partnership is pretty new, and in this some weeks we have already an order entry, I think about 1 million, and we have a pipeline about 45 million, and 50% is licenses, 50% is consultancy, and it's growing every week. So IBM has a huge customer access, a lot of customers what they have already, and they're approaching. We had a call this week where 500 people from sales were trained by our CTO to understand the Bluefield approach. Even when you go in LinkedIn or on our website, you will see it. IBM is going really very strongly out with this message and with the blue field message.
But the IBM relationship, the business model is, you said it was 50% consultant, is that 45 million all IBM?
Just IBM.
But do they take the services part and you take the software part? So you would give them a software at a reseller rate?
Okay, at the moment when we will win a deal, we will do also the delivery. Of course, when you see 50,000 customers has to go to S4 and IBM made an internal calculation, even all consultants, SAP consultants in the world can't manage it. So only an automated approach will manage it. And I mentioned it before, the only company who has the software, who has the IP to do this is S&P. So IBM, of course, have to train. I will meet the global head of all ERP consultancy next week again. I'm pretty close to him. Of course, they have to train people, and they have to deliver at least the standard projects. And I think they have to train 1,000, 2,000 or more people. I will discuss this next week. When at the moment, the first project what we won here now in UK, of course we have to deliver it. But the model can't be that we are delivering all.
Right, so IBM will sell additional services and they will learn how to implement with our software, and so this will scale with future projects. Regarding your second question, for the 5 years program, I can only tell about examples that we have on the market, because I think it's very hard to comment on average program duration, because there are so many influencing factors. We are heading for a project duration between 2 and 3 years. So like Andreas said, it's automation and it's about speed. And of course, the customer itself has to be prepared to adopt to this speed of change. But we think that this is, from a technical point of view, we can handle that. And the customer needs to adopt to the change from, for example, organizational point of view and training of their people. And the cloud question regarding S4, I think the cloud adoption rate, for example, for the SAP is still far more below expectations than when we are talking about the S4 adoption. So SAP is pushing the platform as a future platform very strongly. Adoption is low. On the other side, they want the customers to build their new custom codes on base of the SCP. I don't feel that this question currently is really delaying the programs. It's more the, for example, rollout strategy and the transparency that the customer needs to plan the rollout strategy. And this is exactly where the Crystal Bridge solution that we offer that we introduced to the market in November is the solution for where you can immediately have the transparency of the usage of your system, and this will lead to fact-based decision-making during the planning process. So I don't think that the cloud question itself is a major driver for the delay, but I feel also that the adoption rate of the cloud offering of SAP is below expectations.
So the early version 1, that was the real problem, and now they're moving on to 2, that you got much more confidence that the big enterprises will transition to the S4 HANA.
Yes. So, for example, our biggest customer, Siemens, is, I think, already looking at more or less 2.5 years, something between 2 and 2.5 years, at the S4 functionality and maturity. So maybe they are the most educated, I would say, or one of the most educated large enterprises. They have decided for SNP transformation backbone as a basis for that transformation, and the view of the customers on the maturity level of SAP is strongly rising, which is also common by Siemens, but also by other companies that we are in close touch to. So this is getting really to the point where we can say the wave is very close now.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Lukas Spann, Unilust. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon to all of you. Several questions. The first one is concerning the order shift. Can you please repeat, or maybe I didn't get it during the presentation, what are the main reasons on the customer side for the order shift? The second question is concerning your working capital. You talked about potential from reducing working capital. Can you talk a bit about your potential in working capital? So maybe you have also that target percentages in to the revenue. The third question is concerning your utilization rate in the consultancy. Could you please give us a number in the first half of the year? And the last question is concerning your profitability. If we look at the first half year 2017, you bought some profitable companies, and so your revenue is much higher than the last half year, but your loss is higher than the last half year. So maybe you can give a more detailed explanation why your loss is higher and your revenue also, though that's not a normal relation. So that were my questions. Thanks.
Okay, maybe I take the first one and then hand over to you. The order shift. The customer perspective is pretty much what we have been discussing relating the S4 program. So we expected some large deals that have been shifted due to, let's say, smaller portions in projects. But the other side of the story is what we commented before in terms of our sales force and the refocusing on the market. So, of course, we lost some traction here, but we are back to speed now. So this is the both sides of the medal, I would say. Anything to add?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so maybe Uwe?
Yeah, the second one goes to me, working capital. I think I'll just make a quick calculation, and it's by far not the right calculation, but it gives you an impression of where the potential sits. So if you just calculate DSO based on our balance sheet as of June 30 of this year, and that would give you a DSO number of over 90 days for that point of time, which is above industry average. Now the calculation is not right because the turnover is not the right relationship towards the debtors, because we calculate for some of our products only partly when it comes to turnover, but fully when it comes to debtors. But again, it's the first indication of where the potential sits. On the other side, liabilities towards suppliers, it's 17 days, and that's something that is below industry average and can also be improved. So hopefully that gives you a good indication of how.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For the utilization rate, maybe I hand over back to Oliver.
I understood that this was the concrete question for how the utilization was in the first half of the year, or what was?
Exactly.
Okay, it was in average, if you take the two quarters, about 73% to 74%, more or less.
Okay, and which rate would be a normal one? Because 100% is not realistic.
That's right. I think if we talk about the utilization one that we are heading for, an average would be 80% plus.
Okay.
Okay, then your fourth point was regarding profitability, and yes, your observation is right. I think I mentioned it during the presentation. So we hired staff in the second half of 2017. Yeah, that was then fully on board in this first half of the year, and in combination with the just explained low utilization rate leads to a loss, and as well as the restructuring efforts we had, the 1.8 million I mentioned before. So the combination of those two effects explains the rather low profitability in that first half of the year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have a next question. It comes from Hans Fenger of Wikifolio Deutscher Mittelstand. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thanks very much for having my questions. I have three questions. The first one is regarding recent M&A activity. So, I mean, we've seen a number of really big global deals involving German and U.S. companies who should be potential target customers of you, like Bayer Monsanto or Siemens Alstom or Linde Praxair. Now, you haven't released any public statements that you gained any of those pitches. So could you provide a little bit of color on how you were faring in those pitches, why it hasn't worked out. Second of all, I have a question on Crystal Bridge. So you've changed your approach to a more platform-based Crystal Bridge approach, but you haven't given much color on sales of Crystal Bridge. So how is the market accepting this new platform approach that you're implementing? And the third question I would have is to which extent you collaborate with, let's say, mid-market SAP consultancies like in Germany Data Group or All for One, in terms of using your software to help S4 transition for Mittelstand companies. Is that something you're planning on doing, or are these customers too small for you as a group?
Maybe I start with the last one, because as we commented before, these companies are not too small. They are, a stable backbone of our business model, and customers and partners like All for One others in the area of small and medium businesses are exactly, are a best fit for a factory approach, and this is an approach that we are currently working out exactly with these partners. So because the complexity is not so high in small and medium businesses, we believe that we can accelerate this not only by automated software solutions, but also by a package of combined services for a factory approach. So this is absolutely one direction that in terms of the go-to-market we are heading for. And we are, by the way, really advanced for these, and we will present first results and concrete projects on Transformation World. The Crystal Bridge, this question I really like, because I have been to S&P since 2 years only. Before that, I've been to PwC. I've been a partner for IT transformation programs, and I've never seen any solution that helps a customer understand his landscape and his planning and roadmap and options better than this before. I've been personally involved in about 30 to 35 presentations for customers and partners since November. And the feedback we got was not only good, but really excellent. So we expect that this solution will be really the foundation for large transformation programs in the future, and it's a future cornerstone of our unique selling proposition that we're presenting to the market. For the M&A, I can't comment on specific customer situations right now. Of course, we are into that situations and pitches. There is more about to come, but maybe please understand that in such a public call, I can't comment on a single situation. So we are confident, and as Andreas pointed out, this market is working, and it's, of course, one of our major business drivers that we soon will get out messages that are interesting for the public.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would hand back to you.
Okay, if there are no further questions, we would like to close the call. Thanks for joining, and goodbye.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.